Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
Boom, boom, boom. I see Night Rebel 556 is logged in. You get a gold star because you're the first one in tonight. I'm John Jeffers here at the Contra Radio Network. I'm your host, founder, and executive producer. All right. Last Wednesday night, the Roundtable Reporter got a couple reports that they're trying to call in on the toll-free number. So here's the update on that. Blog Talk Radio has in their finite wisdom, let's make it easy for them, decided to get rid of that feature. So there's no longer a toll-free number to call in. So I have to redo all the business cards. Thank you, guys. So there are three ways to get a hold of us now. Chat room or 516-453-9389, 516-453-9389. Or if you're on the Blog Talk Contra Radio site, hit the Skype button and you're off you go. And if you want to, let me think. How can we do this? Now that's it. Only three ways now. So that's what I get for my $40 a month. They just, this feature is no longer available. Nothing like, hey, did you guys like this feature? Do you want to keep it? Whatever. Nope. Getting rid of it. Okay. All right. Anyways, that was about Wednesday night. We've got a couple of things. Let's see. I've got a listener, and what I want to do is this, and I want to get to it right away, because I want you all to think about this, all right? And the CRN Facebook page, I posted half of some of an email message I got from one of our listeners. And I wanted to share it with you, and I shared the part where, you know, he told me about some of the, what he likes about the show. But let's put it this way. We're going to call him JD because, hey, look, a lot of you out there don't want your last names used, and I'm not going to do that to you. A lot of you get value your privacy and whatnot. And who knows who sees the Facebook page and goes trolling around looking for people to screw with. So what I do is, if you like the CRN Facebook page, I say welcome. Now, CRN welcomes, you know, first name, last name. Name, initial only. Just that way you hear that we got it for you. But he sent me an email, and I want to share this with you. And I'm going to share the whole email with you. All right? So I want you to understand what's going on. All right? He says, Mr. Jeffers, I've become a huge fan of your show over the past month, and I'm working to catch up on all past episodes. I especially enjoy the Roundtable Report with the addition of Terry Kaz. The amount I've learned from you is overwhelming at times. When you jump the wall and yell freedom, turn around and tell Illinois, you may all go to hell, I'm going to Texas. We would love to have you. I'm also a listener and a member of another podcast known as The Student of the Gun. SOTG is not your typical gun show. Professor Paul Markle doesn't discuss the latest gear or shooting sports. The focus is on political reasons for being an armed citizen and training to become a stronger, smarter, faithful patriot. Our online family listeners and substantial and continual source of inspiration and motivation to exercise my body, mind, and skill set. That being said, one of my fellow students has reached out for help and in a classic put your money where your mouth is move, has put up 1,000 rounds of 9mm ammo from his stockpile for raffle to help raise money to research the disease his wife has. He says, Jeremy's a great guy and truly deserves any help his fellow patriots would be willing to offer. So I will let Jeremy tell you the whole story and give you more info about the raffle. By the grace of God, I still get to wake up with my wife every day, and I want to keep it that way for many more years. So here's the backstory. I've been very blessed with many great things in my life, health, family, great circle of friends, and just a few things that make me a lucky guy. Of those things, my beautiful wife, Malia, is hands down the best thing that has ever happened to me. We have been happily married for over 10 years now. Unfortunately, my wife has not shared the same luck that I have when it comes to health. She's been suffering for the last 10 years with ulcerative colitis. For those of you that may not be familiar with this disease, in short, it is a bleeding ulcer in your colon and intestines. It can be incredible pain. It can be incredibly painful, totally debilitating, and even life-threatening. She has been hospitalized and has even received blood transfusions throughout her battle with this disease. As of today, there is no cure for ulcerative colitis of Crohn's disease, but they are working diligently to find one. My wife approached me and said, quote, "We need to help fight this disease on a grander scale," end quote. I knew there was no way that I could tell her no. That's why I'm asking for your support. I have signed on with the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, and I have pledged to raise $5,000 to help fight in the cure for this terrible disease. However, I was not raised to stick my hand out and ask blindly for a donation. That is why I'm raffling off 1,000 rounds of Winchester 115 grain 9mm. I want your help, but I want to help you at the same time. So every $10 donation will get you one raffle ticket. $20, two tickets, $30, three tickets. All right, you see where this is going. So when you, I'm going to give you the link here to the donation in a minute. I want to finish up this email. So when you follow this link to make your donation, you'll be asked to enter your email address. Each email address will be assigned to a corresponding number of tickets equal to the donation amount. All donations made during the month of February will be entered into the raffle. On February 29th, that's 9 days from now, one winner will be drawn at random. The winner will be notified by email and have 24 hours to claim the prize. If no response is given within 24 hours, another winner will be drawn out at random. I greatly appreciate your support. Thank you, and God bless all. If you want to read more about his wife's story to make a donation, please follow this link, www.maliastory. That's MaliaStory.com. Please take a moment to help support Jeremy and his family. Thank you for all your time, Mr. Jeffers. JD. And let's get the site up here for the... Okay. What we're gonna, you're going to go to this. You know, let me see if I could do something here about this. You know, okay. Yeah, okay. That's what we're going to do. All right. I'm going to sit here. Let's see if we can do this here. It's from Team Challenge, Crohn's and Colitis. I'm going to post this on the CRN Facebook page right now. As we speak, you'll see it. It's Ironman Challenge. Ironman Chattanooga 2016. Jeremy Reichmanner, Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. That is where you go to get the raffle tickets. So it's now posted, done. It's there. Now, I asked JD if he wanted to come on tonight. I don't know if he will or not. But here, I see guest 1379 is logged in too. Welcome. So there you go. The man needs donations to help raise it for the Crohn's fight. And he's not willing to ask for a blind donation. He's willing to put up 1,000 rounds of his own supply catch, 9mm, 115 grain. So that's a lot of ammunition. I wanted to put that out there right away. I want you to start thinking about it. I wanted to get out there right away, because I'll tell you, if it was my wife, or it was your wife or mom or whatever, and you're in the same position, I'm sure you would do what you had to do. All right. Here we are. 10 minutes in the show, and already I'm sucking down the bottled water. All right. What are we going to talk about? Whoa. Okay. Where was that story I wanted to do? Our title story which you can find on Facebook, on the CRN Facebook page, Contra Radio Network. This is kind of interesting. I like that. Let's see. Well, that'll be the next story we do. As I scroll down endlessly, aha, got it. So you want to keep your preps a secret, do you? All right, we're going to see if we can do that for you then. I'm going to tell you how you keep your preps a secret. This is from preparednessadvice.com, preparednessadvice.com. Number one, first, keep your mouth shut. Oh, hold it, breaking news from Night Rebel 556 on the chat room here at the Contra Radio Network. Jeb is out, finally. I mean, yeah, he's only out because he's out of money, so that's the way it is. Guest 1392 is gone? No, he's in. Welcome back. Okay, great. Guest 1392, welcome to the Contra Radio Network. Do you want to keep your preps a secret? First, keep your mouth shut. And this is during my career in law enforcement. The majority of my cases were made because somebody talked to someone they trusted. I have seen brother turn on brother and parents on children. Be very careful whom you trust. The less people, the better. That is true. The bottom line is this, and when I was doing the same thing, when I was in law enforcement, it was simple. It was wait. People have to talk, and they will blah, 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 because they have to put it out there. Especially if they like to go drinking in the bars. Oh, yeah. They run their mouth. You'd be surprised the things you hear. They go into the bar and just sit back and listen. Just listen to what people are saying. You'd be surprised what you hear. So the case is, my point is this, and that is there is no honor among thieves. All right. So you know, keep your mouth shut if you want to keep your preps a secret. Number two, live in a cash world when it comes to prepping. Credit cards and checks can be traced. True. Number three, remember that anything you order over the internet can be traced. Almost every company I know keeps a list of their customers and what they have ordered. Who knows where this list will end up? We have a call coming in. Welcome to CRN.
Yes, Mr. Jeffers. How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good, sir. Pretty good. Who I got here?
This is J.D. Souther.
How you doing, sir? I hit your email and story right off the bat tonight.
I greatly appreciate it. Yeah, forgive me. I'm on the road and actually pulled over to be able to call in and haven't been able to catch the show.
I do appreciate it. Your sacrifice has been noted. You, sir, get a gold star tonight. Go to the head of the class.
I do appreciate it. I do want to start off by saying I greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here and the opportunity to kind of share this because it hits pretty close to home for me, and this is a good friend of mine. This is a great man who needs a little bit of our help.
Okay.
Should I just go right into it?
Go right into it, my friend. Look, you don't have to worry about anything here. We're not big on procedure. Just hit it and let's go. Roll with it.
All right. A good friend of mine I met through another podcast, another student of the gun. Great man, true American, armed, faithful patriot. His wife has been stricken with ulcerative colitis, which is associated with Crohn's disease. And he made a pledge to, at his wife's request, to do something greater, to help with the research, to help with doing something about this disease, because it is currently incurable. He pledged to raise $5,000 for the foundation, and in a true put his money where his mouth is move, he put up 1,000 rounds of Winchester 115 grain 9mm ammo out of his personal stockpile in a raffle to open to anyone who was willing to donate at a $10 ticket. The winner will be drawn on February 29th. I wanted to spread this to as many people as I possibly could, especially like-minded individuals. The full story can be found at maliastory.com. That's MaliaStory.com. Any help would greatly be appreciated. Like I said, it's a $10 ticket. It goes to a great cause. And, hey, we could always add a little 9mm to the stockpile.
Yes, we can.
And like I said, I greatly appreciate the opportunity to get it out to your listeners. And just to say that, you know, we all stand together. And the more we stand together, the better we do. And this is a man we should stand behind. And I would appreciate any help that your listeners would be willing to give. When you go on, if you sign up and make a donation, like I said, it's one entry into the drawing for every $10 you donate.
Right.
And the winner will be drawn on February 29th. When you go in, you'll be asked to put your email address, and you'll be notified by email. You'll have to respond within 24 hours to claim the winnings. But when you go in and you put your name down in the list, just add the initials CRN for Contra Radio Network behind your name so we can see. So we can see exactly where you came from and how you found out about this.
Oh, that's great. I like that.
We greatly appreciate your help, sir.
Oh, that's not a problem. That's not a problem at all. As a matter of fact, I did put the link to purchase those tickets on the CRN Facebook page like at 801, 802 as soon as we started doing the story. So, yeah, it's out there.
Well, like I said, I appreciate it very much, Mr. Jefferson. I look forward to hearing this podcast tomorrow when I can listen through to the rest of it.
All right. All right, my friend. Thank you again for being a listener. Listeners, like I said, if it was one of your family members, you'd want some help too. And this man's only asking for help. He's putting up, you know, something of value. He's just not a blind donation handout. So, JD, thank you for calling in, my friend. I'm glad you took the time.
Thank you, sir. You have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, there you go, guys. That's it. The man even pulled off the side of the road just to call in. He gets a gold star because of his dedication. Now let's get back to it. Oh, I see we have. Oh, boy. Okay. I have a new login in the chat room. If you want to join the chat room, come on in. It's all right, too. 3BBBQA. 3RB. No, I'm not even going to try to figure it out. All right. Getting back to it is number. Getting back, if you want to keep your preps a secret. Number four is don't get preps to the mail. The post office has been known to record the shipping and return addresses for law enforcement. That I don't know. I don't know, man. I got to tell you. I mean, I guess they could. The shipping and return addresses, but boy, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of effort for the post office. I don't know. All right. Five, keep your preps out of sight. A friend of mine who's a handyman often sees signs of preps in storage when working on houses. Find a good hiding place and think before you let maintenance people into your home. Number six, stay off internet prepping sites, including mine. You leave a record everywhere you go. Then my question for there is, if you're new and you don't know what to do, where are you supposed to go? Okay, that's kind of like, and I told the story many times, as the guy when I was first starting a prepper group, my own prepper group, and the guy says, you know, first rule of prepper group is you don't talk about prepper group. And my response was, well, then how am I supposed to get people to join my group if they want to be a prepper? I never heard back from them. Yeah, that's sometimes you got to think about that, all right? Number seven is, if it is legal in your state, avoid registering weapons. Number eight, be careful when you get rid of your trash. Packaging from preps needs to be thrown away without attracting attention. Many people give away a lot to their neighbors when they put out their trash. Number nine, buy in small quantity, though through local big box stores, pay cash and avoid attention. Watch what you say on the telephone. Remember, the NSA is watching you. 11, well, I got to tell you guys, now, we've talked about the NSA enough. Number 11, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Stay or hide your preps in different locations. Number 12, if you've already started to prep and have made some of these mistakes, spread the word that you are a fool and have changed your mind and have gotten rid of the junk. This is what you need to do if you're trying to keep your preps a secret from the government and from your neighbors. Hiding them from your neighbors is easier. Just keep your mouth shut and keep your preps hidden. Particularly be careful when you are bringing them home if you have large amounts. Before someone says, well, what about you? When I made the decision to help others, I knew that I would be exposed to the public to some degree. But this that was my decision. And the same is true here. You know, everybody knows John's a prepper. Yeah, okay. I'm a prepper. I'm a danger to society. Right. Spare me. Okay. A few episodes back, this is for my Christian preppers, and I got some feedback. And so your Christian preppers out there, I know you're out there, I know you're listening, and we talked about how some of the churches, your church may or not want to be prep. And I got a call from one of my, he's not a church elder at my church. However, he is in the loop. And he called me about a week ago. Yeah, I think it was a week ago. Was it a week ago? Maybe. 5 days ago, maybe. And he told me what was going on. And he had told me some information that that I wanted to share with you. And it's this, all right? And I'm not knocking pastors. Believe me, I'm not. And I want to make sure that we all understand it, okay? And that is this. Some pastors do not want to start a prepper group because they're afraid that it will sow the spirit of fear. And a lot of the churches want to spread the spirit of hope. And we discussed it, and I said, really? I said, I wish the pastor would have told me that. I'd be more than happy to discuss it with him, but I didn't even get that. I never even got that kind of a courtesy. So I was thinking to myself, how about this? How about if you're a prepper, you don't have to hope that you'll survive. Hope that you'll have enough food. Hope that you'll have water. You'll know you have food. You'll know you'll have water. But like I said, I was never given that courtesy when I approached my pastor about starting a prepper group. But anyways, for starting a mutual assistance group and Bible study group for preparedness, this comes out of, where do we grab this out of? Prepperchurch.com, prepperchurch.com. So if you're Christian preppers out there, get your pencils and papers ready. Many people in preparedness understand that going through a big emergency event alone is not something they want to do. There is power and encouragement and safety in numbers. As a result of this understanding, many desire to form a survival or a mutual assistance group. However, OPSEC and just plain knowing where to draw members from or new friends who understand is the biggest hindrance. One solution to this is to form a MAG, which is a mutual assistance group for your new people, off to an already formed group of some sort. My suggestion for the prepared Christian is to do this within a Bible study. I hear from many Christian preppers who feel very isolated in their churches, welcome, that's one of me, because their pastor doesn't believe in preparedness and others just roll their eyes. Let me take that back. There are men in my church who are preppers. They just can't, they're afraid to let it be known publicly or whatever. And that's fine. I can shoulder that burden. That's all right. Well, in that case, you got to start your own group. So what better way to prepare than with others you trust to pray for you and believe the same way you do? So he's offering his website, it's prepperchurch.com, to be a hub for Christian preppers who want to link up with each other, study the Bible, have fellowship, and also learn to depend on each other just in case. So that way you don't have to just hope, you can actually know. So here it goes. Now, and I want you to go, I posted this story on the CRN Facebook page. You can see a list by state of prepper churches that have put up and whatnot. I think there's even one in Canada. So below you'll find information / people who are willing to take lead on starting a group. Contact them and find out about their meeting times. If you don't see your group in your, if you don't see a group in your city or state, start one. So here are some things to consider. This is important. You might want to hold some of your first meetings at a coffee shop or restaurant in an effort to get to know everyone before moving into a house or something more conducive to studying the Bible, praying, and fellowshipping. Don't share too much personal information too soon. You need to build trust with each other. And 3, trust and believe in the Holy Spirit to give you discernment at all times. Of course, many preppers are going to freak out about this and throw up red flags because of OPSEC. I understand all that. But at some point, you need to trust God. You trust him with your eternal life. You can't trust him with your with your earthly life? Of course you can. Discernment and always use wisdom. So, what do we got here? Format for a Bible study. Let everyone know a week before the meeting, a chapter of the Bible to read over a few times. Those who want can study deeper using online tools. Brew a pot of coffee. Start with an icebreaker to get people talking and to learn a little bit about each other. Don't worry, nothing super secret. If you know, there's some icebreaker ideas out there, it's not hard. Ask questions and don't hesitate to allow some uncomfortable pauses that will cause people to talk. If you need help with coming up with questions, feel free to use the questions they started putting together. And again, go to the story on CRN Facebook page. As the one asking questions, I don't always look at the person talking because they direct their answers or insights to me. I look down from time to time to drink coffee. This forces people to look around and talk to the whole group. That's a good thing. All right? So don't be afraid, my Christian preppers, but to do what you need to do. It's okay. You're not going to be excommunicated. Well, at least you shouldn't. And if somebody's, asked if prepping is biblical, I give you here's three right off the top of my head. One, Noah, the world's first prepper, and very successful, I might add. How about Joseph? The story of Joseph is in Egypt in the 7 years of famine. They prepped for that. Third one, Jesus' parable of the maids, the oil in the lamp and the maids. I can't remember the title of it off my hand. But if you're a Christian, you know which one I'm talking about. There, that's prepping. All right. Here's something we've talked about, and sometimes we don't always do a good job of talking about it. I want to get on with it here. We talk about the use of antibiotics. We talk about trying to obtain antibiotics and whatnot. When we have antibiotics, it's very easy to misuse them, as you're well aware of, because you're not stupid. You're a smart audience. But the question is, when do you use them? So I got this off the survivalmom.com. Survivalmom.com. It's how to use antibiotics. I think it's a good article, and I like a lot of her stuff. I really do. So, sorry, I had to take some water there. Antibiotics are used at specific doses for specific illnesses. Guest 1451, welcome to the show. It's important to have as much information as possible on medications that you plan to store, so consider purchasing a hard copy of the latest physician's desk reference. This book comes out yearly and has lots of information that just about every medicine manufacturer today. Online sources such as drugs.com are also useful, but consider our hard copy for your library. You never know when we might not have a functioning internet. Got to make a mental note on that one. The desk reference lists medications that require prescriptions as well as those that do not. Under each medicine, you will find the indications, which are the medical conditions that the drug is used for. Also listed will be the dosages, risk, side effects, and even how the medicine works in the body. I don't have to tell you that this is a large book. It's okay to get last year's book. The information rarely changes much. It's important to start off by saying that you will not want to indiscriminately use antibiotics for every minor ailment that comes along. In a collapse, the medic is also a quartermaster of sorts. You will want to wisely dispense that limited and, yes, precious supply of life-saving drugs. I see. Well, guest 1451 has logged out. Welcome. Chuck, 98, has logged in. I believe it's Charles from Nebraska. It is Charles from Nebraska. Welcome, Charles. Haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. Glad you're still alive with us. Hope your efforts to create a prepper group are as fruitful and successful. All right. Liberal use of antibiotics is a bad idea for a few reasons. One, overuse can foster the spread of resistant bacteria, as you'll remember from the Salmonella outbreak in Turkey recently. That made so many people ill. Remember that? Turkeys? Mm-hmm. Potential allergic reactions may occur that could lead to anaphylactic shock. Bad idea. Making a diagnosis may be more difficult if you give antibiotics before you're sure what medical problem you're actually dealing with. The antibiotics might temporarily mask a symptom which could cost you valuable time in determining the correct treatment. Ah, okay. You can see that judicious use of antibiotics, well, your close supervision, is necessary to fully utilize their benefits. Discourage your family members from using these drugs without first consulting you. Now, there are many antibiotics, but what antibiotics accessible to the average person would be good additions to your medical storage? So here's some recommendations for drugs also available in the veterinary form without prescription that you'll want in your medical arsenal. Amoxicillin. It's available in 250. Oh, there goes the Flight for Life helicopter crossing over the house. Amoxicillin, 250 milligrams and 500 milligrams. You find it under Fishmox and Fishmox Forte. Ciprofloxacin. Oh, Chuck in Nebraska, hold on. Chuck in Nebraska says, your last Bible reference is about the 10 brides. Only 5 had prepared by having fully amount, right amount, full amount of oil in the lamp. There you go. Thanks, Charles. I appreciate it. Get back to it. Now, ciprofloxacin comes in 250 and 500 milligrams. You'll see it under Fishflox or Fishflox Forte. Cefalexin also comes in 250 milligrams and 500 milligrams. It's Fishflex and Fishflex Forte. Metronidazole only comes in 250 milligrams. You'll find that under the name Fishzole. Fishzole, Z-O-L-E. Doxycycline, 100 milligrams. That's bird biotic. Ampicillin, that's 250 milligrams and 500 milligrams it comes in, and you'll find under Fishcillin and Fish, you know, F-I-S-H, Fishcillin Forte. Well, this is going to be a good one. How about sulfamethoxazole, 400 milligrams, and trimethoprim, 80 milligrams. That's bird sulfa, if I had that then. And Chuck says, in reference to one of our previous stories tonight on the chat room, he says, mail reference. It would explain why the mail is slow, scanning everything. Well, yeah, it is what it is. Now, there are various factors that you can choose, such as azithromycin, but these selections will give you the opportunity to treat many illnesses and have enough variety so that even those with penicillin allergies will have, you know, well, they'll have options. Well, cefalexin, although not in the same drug family, has been quoted as having a 10% cross-reactivity rate with penicillin. So let's discuss how to approach the use of antibiotics by using an example. Amoxicillin, aquarium version is Fishmox, Fishmox Forte, Aquamox. Comes in 250, 500 milligrams, usually taken 3 times a day. Amoxicillin is the most popular antibiotic prescribed to children. It's usually in a liquid form. It's more versatile and bitterly absorbed than the older penicillins. Now, amoxicillin may be used for the following diseases. Anthrax, prevention or treatment of cutaneous transmission. Chlamydia infection, sexually transmitted. Urinary tract infection, bladder or kidney infections. Helicobacter pylori infection, which is what causes peptic ulcers. Lyme disease, transmitted by ticks. Otitis media, which is a middle ear infection. Pneumonia, which is lung infection. Sinusitis, skin or soft tissue infection, which is like cellulitis and boils. And actomycosis, which is that's a cause of abscesses in humans and livestock. Bronchitis, tonsillitis and pharyngitis, which is what? Strep throat. Now, there's a lot of information, but how do you determine what dose of frequency would be appropriate for what individual? So let's take an example. Otitis media is a common ear infection, especially in children. Amoxicillin is often the drug of choice for this condition. So first, you'd want to determine what your patient is not allergic to amoxicillin. The most common form of allergy would appear as a rash, but diarrhea, itchiness, and even respiratory difficulty could also manifest. If you see these symptoms, or if your patient develops a rash, you should discontinue your treatment and look for other options. Antibiotics such as the sulfamethoxazole or azithromycin could be a second-line solution in this case. Now, I want you all to understand something I'm not a doctor. I'm only reading this stuff. I give you the information. So if you're going to sit here and try to become, you know, a doctor in a non-emergency, non-grid down situation to your family to save a few bucks from going to the doctor, well, then you're a fool. Don't do it. All right? This is important stuff, guys. And it's, you know, we're talking about dangerous things here. I know it's just antibiotics, but you give the wrong antibiotics to the wrong person for the wrong thing, you can end up in a real problem. So don't do it. If you have the ability to go to a medical doctor, go to the medical doctor. If you have one in your group, defer to them. All right. Once you've identified amoxicillin as your treatment of choice to treat your patient's ear infection, you will want to determine the dosage. Now, as otitis media often occurs in children, you might have to break a tablet in half or open the capsule to separate a portion that would be appropriate. If you're going to open the capsule, do not do it in a windy place. For amoxicillin, you'd want to give 20 to 50 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, 20 to 30 milligrams per kilogram for infants less than 4 months old. This would be useful if you have to give the drug to a toddler less than 30 pounds. A common child's dosage would be 250 milligrams, and a common maximum dosage for adults would be 500 milligrams. Luckily, these dosages, even in veterinary equivalents, are exactly how the commercially made medications come in a bottle. So you take this orally 3 times a day for 10 to 14 days, twice a day for infants. If your child is too small to swallow a pill whole, you could make a mixture with the water called a suspension. Now, to make a liquid, you crush a tablet or empty a capsule into a small glass of water and drink it. Then fill the glass again and drink that. Particles may adhere to the walls of the glass. You can do some flavoring to make it taste better. Do not chew or make a liquid out of time-release capsules of any medication. You will wind up losing some of the gradual release effect and perhaps get too much into your system at once. These medications should be plainly marked time-released. Now, you will probably see improvement within 3 days, but don't be tempted to stop the antibiotic therapy until you're done with the entire 10 to 14 days. Sometimes they'll kill most of the bacteria, but some colonies may persist and multiply if you prematurely end the treatment. Oh, note here, antibiotics only work with bacteria, not viruses. All right, remember that. Now, in times of trouble, however, you might be down to your last few pills and have to make some tough decisions. For your patients with penicillin allergies, consider stockpiling doxycycline, ciprofloxacin, tetracycline, metronidazole, azithromycin, clindamycin, and the sulfamaxazole. These drugs belong to different pharmaceutical families and shouldn't cause a penicillin allergy to erupt. If you're the person who will be responsible for your family's medical well-being, take the time to learn how to diagnose and treat common illnesses. You never know if hard times might one day make modern medical care inaccessible. And that's from the survivalmom.com. I saw something the other day. Where did I see that? I found it interesting. It's, you know, those little memes you see on Facebook and all that. If I can remember one. If you don't wait to prep until it, oh, I can't remember it. I'll look for it. I'll find it next show. I found it interesting. And basically, it's more or less, if you're an armchair prepper now, stop waiting. What else we got here? What we got? Nothing new in the chat room. No phone calls. All right. We're good on that. What did we want to talk about? Oh, for Patriots out there. Patriots, Patriots, Patriots. Don't want to forget you guys. I got a story here, especially for those of you living on the southern border. Frank Gaffney warns the southern border is now a fertile environment for jihadis. We got this from Breitbart.com. Oh, here we go. NightRebel556 in the chat room says, an important thing to consider is how not to get infected. True. In a situation where current medical treatment is non-existent, strict SOPs on hygiene and sanitation must be established. For example, a scrub room should be set up. Excellent point. You know, washing your hands 2, 3, 4 times a day is a good idea. During the cold and flu season, I myself personally will not shake hands with anyone. I won't, because I know myself. You shake hands with somebody, and before you know it, you got an itch or something. You're touching your nose, your mouth, your face, something. Next thing you know, you've just contaminated yourself. Guest 1491, welcome to the Contra Radio Network. So, and that goes, and I also wash my hands a lot during the wintertime, just because, if I'm sneezing and all that, I don't want to be touching my wife. My daughter, because she's in college now, I hardly ever see her anymore. But that's an important thing. And don't think that just because you use the alcohol gel or whatever. I won't tell you what we called it in the police department. We called it something else. Because some of the times the people you got to deal with, well, they're not the most clean people. And I mean that from a hygiene perspective. And they haven't showered or bathed in quite a while. And they have quite a distinct aroma. Guess what? Yeah, we're using it. So just because you're using an alcohol-based hand sanitizer, it's okay, I guess, but it's not it's no substitute for soap and water. And remember, when you're washing your hands, especially in like the cold and flu season and whatnot, leave the soap on your hands for a good 20 seconds. Give the soap a chance to do its job. All soap is sticky and it grabs onto bacteria and everything else. And then when you wash it off, it all washes off with the soap. Okay, that's basically how it works. You would think they would have had soap for since the beginning of time, and maybe they have. I haven't looked into the history of soap. I'm just saying it seems pretty simple to me. Anyways, so Frank Gaffney warns southern border is now a fertile environment for jihadis. We got this from Breitbart.com. Frank Gaffney, founder of the Center for Security Policy, appeared on Breitbart News Daily with host Stephen K. Bannon on Wednesday to discuss the need for tighter border security and how it conflicts with Pope Francis's support for mass migration from the third world into Western countries. Gaffney used the Zika virus as a metaphor for how mass migration brings security pathologies from regions with serious security issues into the United States. Much as Zika has flourished in countries with less stringent disease and mosquito control protocols. We've now got these cartels operating with gangs all over the United States, said Gaffney, referring to South American drug cartels. Literally, every state in the Union is now a border state. That's partly because we have been neglecting the border, he continued, and not preventing people who have been operating on one side of it from operating on both. Gaffney warned that the drug cartels are not alone in establishing operations on both sides of the porous border. They are now increasingly accompanied by and collaborating with jihadists that the Pope is ignoring in Europe, where he is residing at the moment, and a lot of other places besides, of course, he said. Noting that the big cartels have been compared to the Islamic State in their organizational methods and violence, Gaffney said, You also have the Islamic State in Latin America. You also have Hamas. You also have Hezbollah. You also have the Iranians. And by the way, the Chinese and others. That side of the border is now a fertile environment for jihadists to operate from with impunity and to bring their violence and other kinds of predations here as well. Oh, guest 1502, welcome to the show. Guest 1495 logged out. Guest 1502 is logged in. Welcome to the Contra Radio Network. Appreciate it. How about 5 fatal mistakes to avoid when bugging in? That's right. Where do we find this one? I always like to give credit where credit's due. I don't want to steal anybody's credit. I won't do it. Survivopedia.com. Survivopedia.com. This is written by Carmela Tyrell. November 12th of 2015, just a few months ago. The fatal mistakes to avoid when bugging in. There's no question that the decision to live off the grid will present many challenges, as will bugging out to a survival group or other safe location. Interestingly enough, it can also be very hazardous to stay at home during and after a major crisis or upheaval. Now, if you remember, I think, was it last week? Last week, we talked about the fact that Don't bug out. It's safer to bug in. Look, a couple things I want you to remember, and I haven't said this in a while, and if you're a new listener, I'm going to want you to understand this. There's no such thing as a prepper expert. There just isn't. The closest thing you'll find a prepper expert are probably those that are in the military who've been on long-range reconnaissance, who've had to, you know, been out of touch for weeks on end as they do their recons and whatnot. They've had to live off the land, basically, carry their stuff with them. When somebody says, well, I'm a survival expert, if somebody ever tells you that, this is the question I want you to ask them, and I want you to ask them seriously. Hey, guest 1513 has logged in. Welcome to the show. And 1502 has left. It's like a revolving door here. Is this, you ask that person, they say, well, I'm a survival expert. I'm a prepper expert. I want you to ask them one question. Ask them what their credentials are. Ask them what makes them a prepper expert or a survival expert. And don't feel sheepish about asking the person this, all right? I've asked a couple people that, and I've never got a response. They never responded to me again. It's an okay question to ask because they're asking you to put your faith and your trust in them, which is fine. However, you also have to be able to ask them this question, and that is this. What makes you the expert? What makes you the survival expert? What makes you the prepper expert? You know, what are your credentials for, you know, claiming that title? All right, not myself. I've always told you, and I'll always say it, I'm not a prepper expert. Don't claim to be. All I do is pass along information. So that's why sometimes I give the information, hey, don't bug out. You need to stay bugging in. This story says just the opposite of the last episode. You know, the five fatal mistakes to avoid when bugging in. All right? So ultimately, there are five and relatively simple but often overlooked things you should try to avoid at all costs. While it may take a bit of work to ensure that you do not fall into these traps, it can save you time, money, and well-being in the long run. Uh-oh. Night Rebel 556 is unhappy. He's lost audio connection. It's all right, buddy. Do this. We can't. He'll log back in. Yeah, that's not a problem. Number one, lack of awareness about your surroundings. If you have been actively prepping, then you're always thinking about ways to improve your situational awareness. We talked about that last week, remember? As with so many other things in life, sometimes it's very hard to distinguish between routine background elements of your life that won't matter in a crisis situation and those that will. Now, some areas of where you may be blindsided include overall suitability of the land and building where you will be bugging in, an accurate and thorough assessment of risk of exposure to rioters, an accurate and thorough assessment of how government and first responders will respond to the crisis and post-crisis period. Don't forget about the post-crisis period. This is important stuff. So how your personal advantages and limitations will change over time, lack of knowing how zoning laws and other regulations will prevent you from making viable prepping plans or even prevent you from doing what is needed after a crisis occurs. Now, today, many people that are working on their survival plans figure that if the situation is bad enough, local, state, and federal governments won't be around or able to enforce the kinds of regulations that make it difficult to store and operate necessary survival equipment. Those very same people are unaware that we are living in a world with a global government that can and will send troops and other forms of support to governing bodies that can longer control or manage any given situation. That includes our country and everybody else's country. Welcome back, Night Rebel 556. Hope your technical difficulties have been solved, sir. All right, number two, believing you'll always be safer in your own home. No matter what happens in life, chances are you'll just want to be in your own home when you can get to something to eat, go to bed, take a shower, etc. Your home isn't just a place where you carry out the daily tasks associated with taking care of yourself. It is your ultimate safe haven. In fact, even when people are very sick and need extensive care in a hospital, they always tend to feel safer at home and want to return as soon as possible. On the other hand, there can be a number of situations where being at home can pose more of a risk than being somewhere else. In a post-crisis world, it is anyone's guess which option will be better for you. Never a truer statement has been stated right there. Just think about that. I like it. I like it so much. I'm going to say it again. It is anyone's guess which option will be better for you. That's a great one. And then you have to remember that too. In other words, you yourself are going to have to pick what is best for you. And even then, it's a crapshoot because we just don't know. All right? Now, even in a flood, earthquake, or hurricane scenario, the house next to you may be demolished while yours remains relatively unscathed. Never simply avoid looking at the fact that your home may be too dangerous to stay in before, during, and after a crisis period. Here are just a few things that should alert you to the fact that you may have some problems if you choose to bug in. One, the floors, walls, and roof are in disrepair. Chances are you would be amazed at how many people have enormous credit card, mortgage, and car payment loads, even as their home is, you know, propped up on jacks or they need 5-gallon buckets to catch leaks from the roof when it rains. A home that is in this condition may seem like home to you and impossible to leave. However, it can spell death for you in a crisis scenario. While you may feel at peace, you will be at peace if you stay in there long enough, with that kind of ending, you may find yourself thinking and feeling differently when you or a loved one are pinned under a beam and screaming for hours or days for help that may not arrive. Your debt profile and how it impacts where you live. There is no question that many people quagmired in debt would not necessarily mind an upheaval that essentially causes all debts to be excused. Waiting for such an event and thinking that you can survive in your current home is about as rational as believing, drinking poison Kool-Aid will get you to the promised land courtesy of the Hale-Bopp. Make sure that you understand how your debt and income profiles affect your ability to bring your home up to suitable standards or how your finances prevent you from getting into a safer apartment or neighborhood. If you need to let go of other prepping activities in favor of focusing on these matters and resolving them, then do not hesitate to do so. You understand that, right? It's better to give up on the prepping activities for a short time in order to improve other areas such as, you know, where you're a new home, a new place, that kind of thing. You can always go back to more conventional elements of prepping once you have secured a safer home or bugging in. That being said, while you are attending financial matters, you can still be amassing information and fine-tuning your plan so that you know what to buy, where to get it, and how to use it. Number three, insufficient training and knowledge development. Just because you start each day off with a shower and a decent breakfast, it does not mean that you know enough to survive a major crisis scenario staying home. In fact, many of the habits you take for granted may prove fatal in certain conditions. Consider a situation where you are deciding to bug in during a hurricane or other massive flooding. Chances are, if you live in a city or town, then you'll be relying on municipal water or other local water supplies that may have been contaminated by sewer system overruns. As strange as it may seem, when people hear a boil water advisory for cooking, they will still hop in the shower and assume that the water is clean enough to wash their bodies with. Not only will you run the risk of exposing yourself to raw sewage and all kinds of dangerous chemicals, but you may also wind up being exposed to any number of deadly diseases. Now, that's if you're hooked up to a municipal water supply. Me, I've got a well. 40-foot shallow well. There you go. Not only will you run the this is just one example of insufficient training and knowledge development in areas where you may feel confident in your skills. Other things that bring people bugging in may overlook as they make their plans are this. How bathing and other hygiene protocols will change in a survival scenario. Even being a frequent camper and outdoor activity person cannot truly prepare you for days on end when you will need to conserve water and must use bath wipes or other resources to keep your skin and teeth in reasonably good condition. Changes in cooking and food preparations include if you are the type that stores up and stocks up on frozen foods or prepackaged meals, everything will be lost when there is no power to run refrigerators or freezers. Now, to add insult to injury, if your cooking skills don't go much beyond the coffee maker and the microwave, you will find it very hard to safely manage a propane stove or an open fire. Needless to say, If you decide on bugging in so that you could avoid outdoorsy scenarios, then you may find yourself at a distinct disadvantage even though you're in your own home. Make sense? Yes? All right. Changes in how you manage medical conditions and needs. Even though you can buy a virtual pharmacy of useful herbal remedies, the vast majority of people don't know how to choose good quality products, let alone use them to their best advantage. To make matters even worse, there tends to be a distinct lack of interest in topics such as bystander CPR, general and advanced first aid, emerging trends in medical technologies. While you may have no interest in being a doctor or other type of medical provider, that does not mean you should avoid learning how to splint a broken bone or stop excessive bleeding. It is also very important to keep up with the new learning in the field of medicine. Many things that were thought to be true about various conditions are being disproven. As a case in point, do some research on leaky gut syndrome and find out all about the conditions it can lead to. If you are suffering from any one of these conditions, you could put yourself at an advantage by looking for alternatives that will restore your well-being instead of hoping that your medicine stockpile will get you through in a crisis situation. The words situational awareness, we talked about that last week, remember? Situational awareness often bring dark alleys, gunshots, martial arts, smooth moves to mind. Sadly, the more active your imagination be on this matter, the less prepared you'll be actually to defend yourself or escape during a house invasion or riot. No matter how calm and cool you think you'll be in a situation, rest assured that adrenaline alone will have you shaking as every thought flees from your mind. And it's true. And your punches and kicks seem to be moving through some weird goo and miss their target. If you have never been in a real street fight or had to pull a knife or a gun or use it on an attacker, then you truly don't know what's involved, let alone how to defend yourself in your home from multiple attackers. Never assume that being in your own home will mean you are safe regardless of the condition of society. Dedicating the term situational awareness to self-defense alone. This particular term can be applied to just about any area of life. Invariably, the more you know about what is going on around you and within yourself, the more you'll discover what needs to be done. Lack of structuring your home's internal landscape. Regardless of your neighborhood and how nice you want your home to look, there are some disastrous orientations of furniture that will make it very easy for attackers to get in and take over your home. Make sure that you know how to use fields of fire and how to direct invaders to locations where you can deal with them more effectively and easily. So do not assume that this is sufficient. If you have a gun, practice hitting targets in those areas with laser sights. Throw knives, shoot soft darts, practice throwable arrows. The more muscle memory you have and the more confidence you have in your fields of fire within your home, the better chance you'll have defending it and yourself. An accurate understanding of human behavior and intentions. Now, in crisis situations and scenarios, it is all too easy to become paranoid and lose all sense of how people can work together to overcome a crisis. Always make sure that you know when to defend yourself with words and how to shift the situation to your advantage. Simply shooting and asking questions later can easily leave you as a target for gangs and just about anyone else that sees you as a threat. This, in turn, can make it difficult, if not impossible, to get out of the situation alive, especially as others begin working together and rebuilding the area. Number four is lack of an exit plan. Many situations where you may decide that it would be simply die in your own home, then face all that goes with trying to bug out. As many people in 9/11, hurricane and tsunami zones have learned, you don't always have a choice about whether or not you will survive the actual crisis event. No matter where you stepped away from your home at a critical moment or some other event leaves you as a survivor, you may well find out that you are alive and relatively well, but can no longer live in your home. Lack of an exit plan from this type of situation can prove worse than fatal. Never forget that others around you that may have passed on or been badly injured would give anything to have what you have now. That's why we prep people. This is why we prep. Do not waste the good fortune you have if you survive a major crisis by not developing a viable exit plan just in case you cannot bug in. Now, some basic things that your plan should include are names and locations of friends or relatives in near or distant locations that can give you a place to stay in time of need. Often, the hardest part of bugging out is the fear that you'll have no place to go. At the very least, if you have a personal location in mind, you can focus on that goal and use it as a means to get started moving out of the crisis zone. A bug out bag that has tools required for navigation, food gathering, food preparation, water purification, and basic medical supplies. If you're traveling to an area with a different climate, then be sure to wear layers of clothes that will enable you to avoid common pitfalls. This may include clothes that will help save off frostbite as well, that will prevent you from heat strokes and dehydration. The financial means to support yourself once you're outside of the crisis zone. If you're in a fairly localized situation, it may still be possible to gain access to debit cards and other bank funds. To maximize your chances of getting at these funds, make sure you have at least one prepaid debit card that is backed by a bank large enough to have branches all over the world. As may be expected, cash or coins are always the best option if you don't want to be tracked. However, then you'll still need to be able to defend yourself from various thieves and other criminals. Now, a list of skills. Boy, that was fast. A list of skills and knowledge that you need to acquire. Make it your business to learn how to hunt, fish, build a shelter, purify water, 10 basic medical needs, navigate and defend yourself. You should also make it a point to learn at least one extended trade that you can use for barter as you move from one area to another, even if you wind up remaining in your local area. Now, these skills will help you as you interact with others trying to overcome the same nightmarish scenario. Number 5, not having a bug-in bag. A bib? Sure. Well, if a bug-out bag is called a bob, a bug-in bag is called a bib. There you go. As you read the term bug-in bag, you may find yourself wondering why you would want to pack a set of essential gear when you have your whole home to survive in. Basically, any given scenario may make certain rooms inaccessible or other problems may limit you to a very limited space. At the same time, if you need to leave, you can cut several hours off your time by having a bag with everything you need for long-term survival. Now, your bug-in bag can be limited to essential tools that you'll need to obtain water and purify it, as well as tools for obtaining and preparing food. In some cases, you can follow guidelines for a bug-out bag. However, bear in mind that limited traveling distances and your neighborhood features may make some things useless unless you're going to bug out. For example, a classic bug-out bag might include fishing gear. If you're living in an inner city, chances are you won't be going fishing, let alone catching anything that is safe to eat. On the other hand, you might find it more practical to have a paper list of all food pantries or other food preparation locations where you can get something to eat, plus seeds in suitable containers. Now, while this won't provide food immediately, eventually you will be able to feed yourself at home. Now, over the years, many preppers that have studied a wide range of scenarios concluded that it will be easier, cheaper, and safer to bug in. Sadly, these same people may be lulled into making some fatal mistakes simply because they're planning to remain in known territory where they feel safe. A crisis situation can turn even your home into a nightmarish, strange, and dangerous landscape. Take the time now to make sure you avoid these mistakes, and you'll have a better chance of thriving on your bug-in plans. All right? That's from survivalpedia.com, survivalpedia.com. I got a message from Mr. Julian. For those of you that remember last week, he was my first international caller into the radio show, called in from Australia. Got a message from him. He told me he's got a couple of American expats. For those that are not familiar with that term, it's expatriates, that are probably going to start listening to the show. If you're listening, I say to the American expats in Australia, welcome to the Contra Radio Network. Hope to hear from you soon. Hope you find this valuable and useful information for you, especially because your government has what? Gun control. Good or not, I don't know. I just know that I'd rather have a gun and not need it than need it and not have it. But that's me. All right. I think we got it all pretty much done here. Let me do a quick check of some things before we wrap up tonight, because I know we are all just so interested in this wonderful world we call prepper and patriots. Is it anything interesting? Something out of the ordinary? Oh, I see. Yeah, well, apparently South Carolina primary, Trump has won. Interesting. What else we got here? trying, let me do a quick check of some other, let's see. Where are we at here? Ah, how about this story? This sounds interesting. I like this. This is from the Prepper website. TimGamble.com. Survivalist myth, the Golden Horde, a nightmare. Many survivalists and preppers have masses of people fleeing the big cities and descending on rural areas after some sort of collapse of our society's economic system, power grid, or just-in-time food distribution system. Folks already living in these rural areas will have to contend with refugees that are totally unprepared, many of which would return to looting and violence to take the rapidly dwindling food and other resources. James Wesley Rawls, in his book, The How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It, it's an excellent book, by the way, described this mass exodus as the Golden Horde. New people, new preppers. It's called the Golden Horde, H-O-R-D-E. It's a term he got from his father, who was comparing the potential mass exodus from the big cities to the Mongol Horde of the 13th century. Here is how Rawls describes it on page 6 of his book. Because of the urbanization of the U.S. population, if the entire eastern or western power grid goes down for more than a week, the cities will rapidly become unlivable. I foresee that there could be an almost unstoppable chain of events. Power failures, followed by municipal water supply failures, followed by collapse of law and order, followed by fires and full-scale looting, followed by massive Golden Horde out-migration from major cities. As the comfort levels in the cities drops to nil, there will be a massive outpouring from the big cities and suburbs into the hinterboonies. Is the Golden Horde scenario realistic or a myth? At one point in our nation's history, the Golden Horde probably would have happened in a long-term grid-down situation. But those days are long past, as the concept of self-reliance has been intentionally erased from the American people. So let me explain some recent real-life examples, all right? Remember New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina? I know my listeners, Marshall and Casey, remember it. Remember all those people standing around in knee-deep water waiting for the government or someone else to help them? They had several days warning that a major hurricane was on the way, yet they did nothing. Even after Katrina hit floods, flooding large sections of the city and collapsing its infrastructure, they did nothing to get themselves out of the situation. Instead, they stood around in knee-deep water until authorities were able to round them up and ship them to the horrible and dangerous conditions of the Superdome. That is called learned helplessness. It's a behavioral term for when an organism, animal or human, has been taught through external stimuli to not help themselves, but to depend on outside factors. In the case of those people in New Orleans, generations of public education and government dependence left much of the population unable to help themselves. For most, it didn't even occur to them to try to get out of that situation on their own. And if it did, they simply didn't know how to even start to help themselves. Now, interestingly, this type of learned helplessness appears in a declassified CIA documents. Now, the CIA defines learned helplessness as a type of instilled apathy, which is very difficult for even the impossible to overcome. Rawls mentions municipal water supply failures in his list of events leading to a Golden Horde. Well, in Flint, Michigan, the municipal water supply failed in 2014 and remains very dangerously tainted almost 2 years later. Despite knowing this, most folks living in the affected area are still living there, still drinking the tainted water, still waiting for government to fix it. In certain areas of Chicago and Detroit, collapse of law and order has already occurred. Those areas are effectively without the rule of law. New people, listen up. The acronym WROL means without rule of law and have been for years. People living in those areas are being slaughtered by gangs and criminals, yet there have been no mass exodus from those areas. Sure, the folks living there want to be safe, but they only know to wait for government to take care of it rather than to get themselves out of those situations. Golden hordes might have been a possibility in the 1940s, 50s, and even 60s, but generations of learned helplessness means it is highly unlikely today. Of course, a few folks today will try to escape the big cities, but most won't even try. Instead of fleeing masses, the masses are more likely to stay in the cities waiting for help that will never arrive. The suffering and death will be extraordinary. Now, despite using Rawls' Golden Horde idea as an example, I do have a lot of respect for him and do recommend his books and his website. What a graph. I just ran across this. I think it's really good. Learned helplessness. I think it's wonderful. I think it's got some really good ideas behind it. What do you think? What do you think about that? I think he makes some pretty valid points there. What do you think? I think it's very interesting to say the least, and I wanted to share that with you right away. All right. What else have we got? In fact, I'm going to post this story on the Contra Radio Net Facebook page because you need it, and I'm here to help you. I want to be your friend. I do. Oh, what do we got here? All right. The Golden Horde. Always a fun group of people to have around when it all goes to hell. All right, there it is. You can just read it out to myself. I thought it was a very good one. I liked it and wanted to share it with you. All right. I think that about does it for tonight, guys. And ladies, thank you again for listening. Thank you for making your menfolk listen in on it as well. I appreciate it. And we're going to call it an evening here. It's not Night Rebel 556 in the chat room says, it's the same thing that happens at a car accident when everyone stands around waiting for help. True. Most people will not move their cars out of the traffic. Note to everyone, if you're involved in a traffic crash, move your cars off to the side. What is that there? Here's one from the 3BBBQA. Says, A-plus show, John. Hey, I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you. I thought it was pretty good myself. I wasn't sure what we were going to do tonight. Joseph in Texas, he did a chat or a quick message to me through the Facebook page. I go, hey, what's the subject tonight? And I wrote back, I don't know. I don't know what the subject's going to be. Sometimes some of the best shows come out when we're just flying it, doing it on the wing, baby. You know, sometimes it works out if you plan it, but I find it more enjoyable when you just kind of do what we do tonight. Let's wing it. Let's see what we can come up with. A little bit of everything. Hey, if you like the radio show, and don't forget, hey, when you buy the those raffle tickets from the website we have up there, this from the very first story, remember, put your name and then the letters CRN after it. CRN after it. I'd really appreciate it. It'd be great. And if you like this CRN Facebook page, please like it. Tell others about it. Let other people know. All right. I'm your host, John Jeffers, saying to you tonight, thank you for listening. And from Prepper and Patriot friends, I say to you, in Kirk in Southern California, my friend, I haven't heard from you in a while, I say verily to you, my friends, Preppers and Patriots, stay safe, stay vigilant, stay alert. All right? Because you never know when the last day, you'll never know when the day before is going to be the day before. All right, until after it happens. All right, then. Good night. I'm John Jeffers. We'll be back Wednesday night at the Roundtable Report, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. Good night, and thank you for listening.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.